Support for WPR comes from UW-Superior Center for Continuing Education, offering Conversations on Living Alone, a three-part series beginning Wednesday, April 17th via Zoom. Details at uwsuper.edu. Support for WPR comes from Focus on Energy, committed to helping Wisconsinites focus on the planet by making smart energy choices. Energy resources for Earth Day and every day can be found at focusonenergy.com.
Mike Cole is a fiction author. He's written a number of books in the Shadow Ops series. He's also done three tours in the military in Iraq, and he was recalled to serve during the Deepwater Horizon oil spill. He was diagnosed with post-traumatic stress disorder. I stumbled across an essay he wrote a while back about PTSD and how we talk about it and think about it, so we got in touch with him. And he joins us now. Mike, welcome to the show.
Hi, thanks for having me.
So you started the essay I mentioned by saying that writing about your PTSD is going outside your comfort zone. Is it hard for you to write about it and talk about it?
I mean, it's funny. I picked up habits from working in the cleared space. When you work in an area that requires a security clearance, you know, mental health is an issue that can cause that to be revoked. And having that revoked isn't just the end of a job; it's the end of a career. And while the agencies that you work for tell you that it's fine, and in the end, it was in my case, it's really hard to get past that thematic culture. And you sort of learn in a deep-rooted way that. That really isn't something you talk about unless you absolutely have to.
Well, there has been a lot of talk about PTSD since the U.S. entered wars in Afghanistan and Iraq. What do we get wrong when we talk about it?
Well, I mean, this is the thing. I think PTSD, and mind you, I'm not a medical professional by any stretch of the imagination, is a lot like autism. We've identified it as a thing, but we don't really know what it is. And we see a lot of treating classic symptoms of it, such as reliving the event, or numbness, or hypervigilance. But the reality of it is that was never my experience, and it was also never the experience of any of the other people that I talked to. I'm not trying to say that is never the experience, but I think that people have a really hard time admitting that they don't know, and it's much easier to slap a diagnosis on it and to give it a medical definition than it is to tackle the breadth and depth of what's a really complex thing.
I want to get into living with PTSD a little more in a minute, but I want to read a quote from your piece talking about the cause of PTSD as you experienced it, and here's the quote. "It was never the snap trauma, the quick moment of action that breaks a person. PTSD is the wages of a life spent in crisis, the slow thematic build that gradually changes the way the sufferer sees the world." Talk about that. Expand on that a little.
Yeah, I mean, this is the thing, is before I was diagnosed, I would have told you were crazy. I think I really didn't feel like I had a right to PTSD. I felt like that was a thing that was the province of hard operators. You know, I was working with people in Iraq who were up to their elbows in blood, who were in firefights every single day. That wasn't my experience. How could I possibly have PTSD? But the truth is that it really is a slow build, and that when you spend your entire life in a crisis zone, and that isn't just for vets, and it isn't just for warfighters, that's EMTs, that can be people in abusive relationships or people who grow up in poverty. You change slowly in a lot of very fundamental ways. And what ends up is that your worldview changes, and it changes so fundamentally that you occupy the world in a different way from people who don't have the same experiences as you. And that dissonance, that disconnect from the rest of society, I really think is the thing that we're calling PTSD. And it's very important to see it that way, because that defies the traditional medical taxonomy as a disease. A disease is a discrete thing. You take a pill, you go through a course of treatment, even in the case of a chronic disease. But how do you treat a shift in perspective?
Yeah, you write that it's not just a disease, it's an altered worldview.
That's correct. Yeah, I firmly believe that. Look, I think that when you grow up in an industrialized Western society, you grow up with a certain sense of a feeling of connectedness and a feeling of significance and a feeling of safety. And when that gets stripped away, and I don't mean, you know, stripped away in some tangential way, but fundamentally stripped away, the way you occupy the world changes. And more importantly, your life goals change. And when those goalposts move, you really are fundamentally cut off from people who don't have the same experience.
You mentioned not thinking that you were somebody who would have PTSD because you weren't in that snap trauma kind of experience. Why did you get diagnosed, and what was your reaction when you got diagnosed?
Well, I mean, I certainly had snap trauma experiences, but none of those resulted in a sudden break. I don't want to get too personal. I underwent some real serious dark times in my life, among which included, you know, severe depression, severe anxiety, losing my fiance. And I finally reached a point where my father and my brother and my best friend were screaming at me and saying, "You've got to get help." And I always pounded the security clearance, I can't. And when I finally hit bottom, and I did, and I started working with someone, and he started walking back the cat on my experiences, and he finally said, this is classic PTSD. You know, at first I didn't believe him. At first I thought he was he was a quack or something. But as we sat and worked through it, I started to realize that I hadn't really understood what this illness was. And that misunderstanding had arisen largely from the messages I was getting from the military. I never forget, there's this Armed Forces Network commercial they had of this guy washing his hands, and the sink is running with blood, and he sees corpses in the background, and his vision turns red. And that was what I thought PTSD was. And it just not only was it not my experience, but that hasn't been the experience for anyone else I've talked to about it.
That's one of the tricky things about it, isn't it? It sounds like, from your experience and the people you've talked to, it's hard to have a one-size-fits-all concept of what PTSD is.
And I think that's the real danger of it. I mean, if I had to define my own PTSD, I would describe it as being unmoored from what makes life significant for most of the population. Your goals change, and what makes life meaningful to you changes, and it changes permanently, and it changes fundamentally. And for me, what's helped has been treating that by setting new goals and charting a new path through life. And that's a course of treatment I haven't seen prescribed through any traditional channel I've dealt with. And I think it's an important thing to be considered, because once I wrote that essay, I'm hearing a lot from other people who agree with me. And I'm sure this is a small sampling of the sufferers, but you know, when you get that kind of affirmation, you feel that maybe there's something to it.
What is it like to make the transition from a life lived in crisis, or the constant risk of being in a crisis situation, to everyday life back here in the United States?
At first, it's the most isolating thing I can possibly describe to you. I'll never forget going out to dinner or going to a restaurant or having conversations and thinking, who are these people? You know, and trying to spend 8 hours in an air-conditioned office looking at a spreadsheet or a PowerPoint presentation after you've been spending 18 hours a day on a battlefield, it's boring and it feels meaningless. But really, the thing in the end was the isolation, the feeling that you are completely, completely alone in it. And obviously, that's not the case, because plenty of people suffer from it. But it takes a while to get connected to that community, and that isolation is a really dangerous spot to be in.
Well, and it's gotta maybe not be that worthwhile to talk to someone like me who hasn't been in that situation. But when you started talking to other people who had PTSD, who were going through what you were, did that help? Did that break that isolation, do you think?
Absolutely. And the thing that's so funny is that I became connected to them not through veterans communities, but through the arts. And what I discovered in New York City is that there's a huge population. There's a society I'm a part of called Sock Art Vets. And it's a whole population of vets, many of whom are PTSD sufferers, who are trying to find things to live for and trying to find ways to reinvent themselves and new goalposts, as I described. And art is a huge piece of that for all of us. And ironically enough, it wasn't Real Warriors and it wasn't Wounded Warrior. It was the arts that gave me that network.
So you talked about goal setting as part of your path to dealing with life outside of that crisis zone. What goals did you start setting?
Well, there's a few of them. And one thing that I did do that I wanted to point out, which is common of many PTSD sufferers, is I went right back into crisis. My day job is with the police department, and I'm an officer in the U.S. Coast Guard Reserve. And the U.S. Coast Guard, unlike other reserve organizations, we don't just train to fight. We do search and rescue and law enforcement every time we drill. So I stay in that crisis zone. And I think that there's two major things that have helped me create new goalposts. One is to quote Neil Gaiman, to make great art. And I know that may seem silly, but for me, it means a lot because it's a way of marking the world. And it's a way of feeling myself resonate in the world the same way I did when I was at war. And the other thing is continuing to serve in crisis occupations. I am frightened every second of every day of my life. And the thought that there might be one person out there who's not feeling that way because they know I'm on watch, that, I mean, hey, I mean, I may be kidding myself. That may be idealistic, but it helps me get to bed at night.
And let's talk about writing fiction. Now, I know you're doing it as a career too. It's not a therapy practice for you, but does it have a therapeutic element?
Absolutely. Because remember what I said to you before about PTSD, it being isolating. Writing, I'm not Emily Dickinson. I write to communicate. I send things out into the world. And I write fantasy. And the wonderful thing about the science fiction and fantasy community is there is such a tight integration between authors and fans. Almost all authors in that community come up out of fandom. So you send what you're doing out into the world and people come back to you. And yeah, I guess part of that's ego boo, but a lot of it is knowing that you exist and knowing that you're still connected and knowing that when you look at people and you can't understand why they're getting excited over goals that have ceased to have meaning for you, you're still connected and you're still having resonance in the universe.
Speaking of the fantasy and science fiction world, the piece you wrote that we're talking about, part of what led up to it was an essay on one of the favorite book series here at Central Time, Song of Ice and Fire, Game of Thrones. You wrote about a couple characters who you recognized PTSD in. What was it like to talk about PTSD through the lens of those fictional characters?
I mean, this is the great thing about science fiction and fantasy, right? It allows you to address topics that are close to you at a remove, which makes them a lot more accessible. But what I really liked about that was in the characters of Arya Stark and Theon Greyjoy, I was able to address both sides of PTSD. And this is another misconception, I think, is that PTSD is universally debilitating. It is also enfranchising. And there is a lot about living in a state of hypervigilance. And there is a lot about having your goalposts move that levels up your life and doesn't just hold you back. And this is, again, where I mean that it's a thing that's not well understood, is that there's a lot of facets to it. And again, I'm not a medical professional, but there's things like that enfranchisement that I just don't see being addressed in the literature.
Last words of the piece we're talking about, you directed to other people with PTSD, whether veterans, EMTs, police, people who've lived with abusive relationships. Last three words of your essay, don't give up.
No, don't. And this is the thing, is that, I mean, I won't lie. In the beginning, I really don't know what kept me going. But, and this is chronic. This is never going to leave me. And there's always bad days. But the reality of it is I am so, so happy with where my life has wound up. And I am doing so many things I never thought I'd get to do. And if I had given up, and man, did I come close, I would have missed this. And that would have been a tragedy.
Mike, thank you very much for joining us and sharing your story.
Thanks so much for having me.
That was Mike Cole. He's author of novels, including a number of books in the Shadow Ops series. He's an Iraq War veteran. I've got a link to his piece, his essay on PTSD, at the Central Time Facebook page.